It's my game right here. I feel it. I'm telling you, I feel it. I taste it. Sometimes you be legendary right here, boy.
This is First and Pod.
They could not run the ball to save their lives in this game.
Your favorite team through a national lens.
The beauty of this podcast is that we don't gloss over anything. We do every team in every game.
Instant reaction to all the big games all season long.
The NFL never seems to let us down when we need a banger, banger.
Now, here are your hosts, Andrew Filippone, with 8-time Pro Bowl corner and 3-time first-team NFL All-Pro.
Peterson may go all the way. He will. Patrick Peterson wins it.
Patrick Peterson.
All right, we go over to the Cowboys and the Giants. The Giants actually put together 2 straight wins to end the season and take them out of contention for the first overall pick. How much did these 2 wins hurt the Giants in the long term?
I think a lot. Now they went from number 1 down to 7. I don't think anything is going to be taken away positively into the offseason because they beat a Raiders team that was deliberately trying to lose the game and a Cowboys team that only played its starters for the first couple quarters of this game. They've got a GM who I think it's going to be an issue with what goes on with their head coach, because if the GM has a bad year, if the Giants have a bad year next year, he's going to get fired. And their coaching candidates know that. So I think that makes them maybe a little bit more reluctant because they don't know who their next boss is going to be. And I also think that for as good as Jackson Dart looked early, his struggles late in the year would make me concerned about his playing style. And his ability to not take big hits, to preserve himself, to be smarter out there. And I think there's raw talent, but I don't think Jackson Dart's for everybody. I don't think Jackson Dart's a guy like, say, when the Chargers job became available, everybody wanted to coach Justin Herbert. I don't think that's the case with him. I thought he showed flashes in his rookie year, but ultimately the numbers weren't great at the end of the day and the team stunk. So I think the Giants' job, although it's more attractive than Arizona, obviously, it's still not a great situation because, yeah. I mean, I would say that their quarterback situation is better than Cleveland's, and I would say it's better than Arizona's, and it might be better than Atlanta's, but Vegas is going to have the number 1 pick. They would have been in a much better spot if they had finished with the first or second pick, because they could have done their homework on Mendoza, thought about that, possibly traded Dart. And if they liked Dart more, they could have traded that pick to a team that really wanted Mendoza and set them up with a lot of future first round picks, Pat.
Yeah. It was tough. I thought it was, you know, the tank bowl, it was going to be extremely hard for them to tank that ball game, in my opinion. You just cannot lose, you know, against the Las Vegas Raiders. It's just something that's almost impossible, you know. So it was almost impossible for them to tank that ball game, and then they're playing the Cowboys. Jackson Dart is still the quarterback, so you know he plays with a lot of spunk, a lot of fire, so he wants to go out there and play his best football. But I think it's definitely going to be a hard job to attract there for a head coach, because you pointed out not only everyone is not for Jackson Dart, but, you know, the GM there is probably he's skating on very, very thin ice. So you don't know what, you know, that situation may be and how your job security may be in the future, you know, if you don't get this thing off to the right start, you know. So it's definitely is a hard job that's going to attract at least, you know, a veteran, you know, head coach in my mind, because, you know, veteran head coach, they like stability. They like something that's they love continuity, you know, and like going in with guys who they trust and who they can believe in. The New York Giants right now don't have that continuity upstairs, because it's a lot of questions that need that has to be answered, you know, with the GM. But all of that is going to rely on the success of the head coach that they bring in. So they're right now are in a very, very bad situation. But at the end of the day, I feel like the New York Giants think they have their franchise quarterback in Jackson Dart. They just have to go out and find the right head coach or the right office coordinator that's going to be able to unlock him and be able to coach him in the right manner to where that he can protect himself. But he does have a lot of raw talent. It's some things that I feel like that can be coached, but the right coach is going to have to do that.
Yep.
A lot there to work with for Jackson Dart, but Pony and Pat, you guys both kind of talked about it, the amount of concern that he might bring with his rambunctious style of play, him and his running back there. So we'll see what happens with the Giants in the offseason. We'll go to the Titans and the Jaguars, another job in Tennessee that could be up for grabs this offseason, but the Jaguars blow out somebody else again and go into the playoffs riding high, and AFC South champions. Are we starting to believe in Jacksonville yet? Pat, I know you've had a lot of reservations about Trevor Lawrence. Has he gained your confidence going into the postseason?
He was another one that started to gain my confidence, especially late in the season. The last month and a half, Trevor has been playing lights out as a passer. We know what he can do with his legs. He's another one that I felt like answered the bell, you know, in those big moments. That's been the biggest question. And it's not me, you know, not liking Trevor Lawrence. That's just the proof in the pudding. You know, he is a quarterback who gave up a 28-point, you know, lead. He is a quarterback who, you know, that had a turnover problem, you know, early on in his career. And that's what, you know, that's the great thing about football. You always have an opportunity to not only, you know, prove who you are, but you have an opportunity to show what you're made of. And right now, Trevor Lawrence is doing that. He's playing at a very, very high level. The defense is playing great. And, you know, Liam Cohen, I feel like, has found or unlocked Trevor Lawrence far as a play caller, being able to give him a running game, being able to give him certain areas in the field to attack. And I feel like the continuity that those two have has really had an opportunity for us to see Trevor Lawrence flourish. So it's been great to see the football Trevor Lawrence has been playing in the last month and a half. He's probably have been playing like the best quarterback in all of football in the month of, you know, December. So if he can continue to play at this level, yes, the Jacksonville Jaguars can be a dangerous football team in this playoff as well. And that's the great thing about, you know, this year's playoff. There's not one team that anyone can guarantee that's going to win it all. You know, all of these teams are, we only have one, you know, repeated division winner that's in this year's playoff, the first time in a very, very long time. So all of these teams are in unfamiliar, you know, circumstances right now. It's going to come down to who can handle the situation the best. And right now, Trevor Lawrence is playing probably the best football out of all of these quarterbacks that's in this playoff tournament as of right now. Let's see if he can keep that mojo going.
They are good at everything. They're top 10 offense, top 10 defense. No quarterback in the NFL other than Drake May is probably playing better football right now than Trevor Lawrence. And it's going to be up to him to dispel his past failures and disappointments in these playoffs. But as far as like where somebody's confidence might be and their mental health, as far as like how they feel about themselves going into the playoffs, I can't imagine that there's a quarterback right now who's kind of got more swagger than Trevor Lawrence with the way they've performed over the last 8 or 9 games. So I think Jacksonville is under the radar because they play in Jacksonville and they have not been a serious team in a very long time. They had that one game where they came back from down 27-0 in the playoffs to the Chargers. And the year after, they blew it and choked in the second half of the season. I can't wait for their game against Buffalo. And I'm excited that on the next podcast episode, we're going to be able to preview it, because I think that's the best game of the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I agree.
Should be a really fun one there. Jacksonville gaining a lot of respect around the league. Liam Cohen should get a lot of shouts for Coach of the Year as well for the job that he's done, from 14 losses to 14 wins. Quite of a turnaround down there in Duval. Packers and Vikings squared off too. Pony, Packers were your Super Bowl pick way back when, if we can remember all the way back, end of August, early September. Andrew Filippone put it on wax and said, the Packers are my NFC pick to go to the Super Bowl. They rest and, you know, kind of get what happens when you rest your starters. But how do you feel about your Super Bowl pick now that Super Wild Card weekend is upon us, Pony?
No shot. Zero shot to get there. Best they can do is beat Chicago, because they've played them close both games and arguably easily could have won both. They don't have Parsons now. I think their offense is just too injured. We'll see what kind of state Jordan Love is for this game, coming off his concussion. Josh Jacobs is way less than 100%. Wide receivers have dropped like flies. No craft there. I think they're a solid football team, but they've been a solid football team for the last two or three years. That's why they made the Parsons trade, to be a better team than that. I think the Bears will probably bring out the best in them. Mm-hmm. But they don't stack up with those teams from the NFC West that all won double-digit games. And I think if they win, that's all they'll do is get past the first week of the season. I don't like how they're playing, and I don't like the health of their roster going into these playoffs at all, Pat.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I don't like the health. Jordan Love is – we haven't seen that. What is his the name that they gave him in December? Tundrum something?
Okay.
What's Jordan Love nickname in December, man? James, help me out. They call him something in December, man. Tundrum something. But anyway, we wasn't able to see the Jordan Love magic that we was used to seeing, especially late in the season, going into the playoffs. He's been battling injuries. The whole team have been battling injuries. I think the Michael Parsons absence is definitely going to hurt them in the playoff, because you're going to have to get after the quarterback in order to create turnovers, in order to get off the football field. They played the Minnesota Vikings. I felt like, I know they had their backups, but they still could have beat the Minnesota Vikings, at least on the offensive side of the ball, because of what J.J. McCarthy, you know, what he was able to provide as a passer all year long. But he ended up getting hurt out of that ball game. But I have a lot of concerns with the Green Bay Packers going into the playoff, just because of their health, the quarterback, you know, his health situation, and the missing of Michael Parsons. I know this was your Super Bowl pick in the beginning of the season, but as of right now, I believe health is something that's going to hinder them for achieving that goal and going on the road to a divisional foe. I think this is going to be a time where, Chicago can, you know, get the last laugh from all of those many years where Aaron Rodgers was bending them over, spanking them with the belt, and this, that, and the other. Now they can get the last laugh, you know, not the last laugh, but, you know, kind of the last laugh in the playoff, where this game means way much more than those games that Aaron Rodgers was beating up on them.
Did a quick search for some Jordan Love nicknames in December, and I don't think these were the names that you were thinking of, Pat. I don't.
Used to call him something, because remember he had the Toyota deal. Because he was one of the first quarterbacks to have the Toyota.
Yeah, he had the Toyota fan deal.
The Toyota deal, yeah.
So they used to have something. I remember they used to say something for, you know, when he was on Sunday Night Football.
James makes it seem like there's an inappropriate nickname or something.
It's not inappropriate, but it's just not anything Pat Peterson would call him. Like, I would say, I'm getting Pookie, and that came from
– Pookie?
Yeah, it came from – it's a reference from him and Kay Adams. He was on Kay Adams' show. She asked him about the nickname Pookie for – like a boyfriend, I don't know. You have Silly Body, it says on the internet, for the way his body moves, or the Love Machine because of his last name. And I'm like, I don't think P2 was talking about any of these names.
Nah, it was something Pat, that Chris Collinsworth called him.
Yeah, I don't think Pat sitting at home talking to his boys like, Pookie was playing good today. I don't think that's what Pat's saying. So we'll see. I'll try to find it, and maybe by Friday we'll have the correct Jordan Love nickname. Let's go to the Saints and the Falcons, the other important NFC South game, because one could not happen without the other this weekend. So the Falcons win, but they fire Raheem Morris. Raheem Morris is out. Pat, what's your reaction to Atlanta kind of letting go of Raheem Morris? Do you think that was the right decision for them?
Oh, man. Honestly, I was kind of shocked by that one. I thought they would give Raheem Morris another year, at least to see, you know, what he was able to do. I thought that they answer a lot of questions that need to be answered coming into the season. As far as on the defensive side of the ball, they got better in the secondary. They got better at the up front, because we knew we saw the year prior to this one that they wasn't able to even sneeze on a quarterback, and this year they was able to get to a quarterback on a very, very consistent basis. The quarterback the quarterback situation was the biggest issue for the the quarterback situation was one of the biggest issues, and closing out ball game, playing situational football, was another issue for this Atlanta Falcons team, because it's no way they should have lost to the Jets. There's no way they should have got beaten the way they did against the Carolina Panthers. There's no way the Miami Dolphins should have beaten them the way that they did, because the Miami Dolphins was just trying to find themselves at that time of the season as well. So those losses, in my opinion, definitely cost them not only the division, but Raheem Morris his job, because they have the talent. You know, they have the talent at the receiver position. They was able to protect the quarterback. They got a running back. They upgraded their defensive front with young guys. They upgraded their secondary with young guys. Now, they just was not able to finish out ball games and play better situational football. And that's what, you know, end up, you know, making them an 8-9 football team. But I was very, very surprised by this fire, just because of what's out there. This might be, honestly, the best attractive job because of, you know, the talent that they do have and what Raheem Morris, how he was able to build this roster. This may be the most attractive job, you know, out of all of the vacancies out there right now. So I can see Mike McCarthy, to be quite honest with you, taking this job right here. I know they probably, you know, have some questions about Michael Penix, because we know they're leaning towards him being their future as of right now, moving forward. So Atlanta Falcons job is a very, very interesting job open for these head coaches that's going to be applying for. But I was very, very surprised to see Raheem Morris get, you know, the pink slip today because of how they was able to finish off the season. Yes, I know it was a rocky road all year long, but owners have to also understand how difficult it is to win without having good quarterback play. Like, everything's like, I know that the quarterback don't win or lose the ball game, but also the quarterback can damn sure lose you the ball game if he can't put the ball in the end zone and if he's turning it over to the other team. So you have to get a solid quarterback play in there, and everything else hopefully will follow suit. But I was very, very surprised by this firing.
I think what happened here was Raheem Morris had to get caught up really as collateral damage for the GM, Terry Fontenot, who was fired too. They've not had a winning season since 2017. And so the GM, who's been there not the entire time, but most of the time, they weren't going to let him hire a third head coach. You know, to me, if you've gone 7-10 for three straight years with Arthur Smith and now back-to-back 8-9, you know, I would have been surprised if they made no changes. So if you fire the GM, I think the way Arthur Blank looked at it was, I'm not going to hire a GM who inherits a head coach. I'm just going to do it both at once in clean house. Because I think what you're nervous about if you're a Falcons fan is, at the expense of our defense, did we try to improve our offense? Because the defense made huge strides this year. Mm-hmm. But the offense still underachieves. Your quarterback was out.
But that's the crazy thing about it. They got the talent. You got Drake London, you got Kyle.
That's been the story there for years, is that, you know, the sum of the parts thing. They've got more good players than they've got production offensively. Yeah. And it keeps happening over and over again. Let me put it this way. If they don't hire an offensive head coach, then I will not have I won't understand this firing. It has to be an offensive head coach. You can't bring a defensive head coach in there and say, this is the guy we believe in, when you just fired a coach who improved your defense hugely in one season, from his first year there to his second year there. So it's got to be all about maximizing Penix and London and Pitts and Robinson. And I would expect that it's got to be one of these hotshot offensive coordinators or Mike McCarthy, like you said. If not, then this decision to fire everybody there and clean house will make absolutely no sense.
Yeah, we'll see.
We will definitely see, but a lot of decisions to be made for a lot of teams this offseason. The Falcons are definitely one of them, because we'll presume that we go into next year with, again, the NFC South being up for grabs. So it will be, once again, anyone's division. Let's go to the Browns and the Bengals, because we talked about history in a lot of weird ways this episode, but we have to highlight it in a great one. Myles Garrett gets the all-time single-season sack record after sacking Joe Burrow for his 23rd sack of the season. That happens, but then Kevin Stefanski loses his job. We talked about how he might be a hot commodity in the coaching world. Pony, do you think that the Browns may have screwed this up yet again with firing Kevin Stefanski?
I do. I don't understand. I know the draft that they had was a good one. Okay, they got Harold Fannin. They found they drafted Mason Graham in the first round. Carson Schwechinger, the linebacker, is probably going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. Judkins, they didn't get him at their facility till the end of the preseason because of his off-the-field stuff. He ends up being a pretty good running back before he gets injured at the end of the year. So they found a lot of good players in this draft, but to me, it's too little too late. Their GM there was brought in. He had to sign off on the Deshaun Watson deal. I don't understand how you can butcher the quarterback position the way that they have with the guys they brought in, and the GM keeps his job and the head coach doesn't. What Atlanta did is what Cleveland should have done. If you're gonna fire Stefanski, you fire the GM. You don't keep one and let go of the other. And I would say, based on his resume, Stefanski's proven to be a better coach than Barry has proven to be a general manager. So now you're going to have a GM again who goes into next year on the hot seat, because they've had back-to-back 5-win and 3-win seasons. And if they go 6-11, the GM's going to get fired and the head coach is going to have to worry about the next guy he's working for. So I don't get that from the Browns. I would have either I would have kept Stefanski, actually, if I had to choose between the two. And he would have gotten one more shot with me in Cleveland, because overall, I think he's done a pretty good job there, Pat.
Yeah. Shout out to Myles Garrett for the accomplishment that he was able to achieve, getting 23 sacks. And, you know, now he's the king of the hill, as he said in his post-game interview. But, yeah, I knew Kevin was getting fired. That wasn't a shocker to me as much as the Atlanta Falcons firing. But I will say he did do a pretty good job, you know, far as what he was dealt with there in Cleveland. But I just thought this season, man, it was just a lot of things he mishandled in this offseason, far as with the quarterbacks, far as with Shador, far as having the wrong wristband.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of things to me that just kept continuing to pile up on him as the head coach, because at the end of the day, those responsibilities fall on him.
I agree with you.
So I knew this was going to end up happening, and he won't be out of a job long. He's probably, you know, the better, you know, the most, you know, well-rounded, you know, credible head coach that's going to be in this coaching circuit. Him and Mike McCarthy, as far as credible head coaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the wrong wristband thing still kind of boggles my mind sometimes. But still a two-time coach of the year. And like I said, two-time coaches of the year do not grow on trees. So we'll see what Kevin Stefanski, what calls and what offers he has to field. Now, one more matchup to wrap up this regular season for the NFL. And it may have been Travis Kelce's last game on an NFL field. We'll see if he decides to retire, but it's the Chiefs and the Raiders. So not only do we might have to say goodbye to Travis Kelce. But the Raiders said goodbye to Pete Carroll in an offseason last year where he was kind of saying he don't lose and texting Amari Cooper, I never had a losing season, just to let you know. It did not go the way he wanted to. The Raiders do secure the number one overall pick for the 2026 draft, but Pete Carroll will not be there to coach that team. Pat, do you think that Pete should have been given one more year in Las Vegas with everything that they have kind of on the horizon, or was this the right move?
Yeah, I thought Pete should have had another year, you know, especially with everything that they had coming in this year, having over, you know, $100 million to spend in the free agency, well, in cap space, having over $100 million in cap space. So therefore, they would have been able to go out in free agency and gotten players that Pete thought that would have been able to help turn his team over a new leaf. But I was very, very surprised by this firing just because of what Pete Carroll inherited. Like, this was a bad team for years, for decades, for the most part, since 2022. Since 2002, last time I can remember that the Raiders have been relevant or had a, you know, made a significant playoff run. So this was a bad job that Pete had to take on. And we all know what Pete was able to do, not only at USC, but on the NFL level, with the Seattle Seahawks, you know, going to two championships, being one of few head coaches to take his team to back-to-back championships, being able to, you know, build a dynasty, as many may call it, with his time there in Seattle, the defense, the quarterback that he had. So we know that Pete Carroll has a great football mind. He just needs the resources. And his first year, he just didn't have that. You know, he did the best job that he could in going out and trading for Geno Smith. Some may say that was a bad trade, but at the end of the day, that was the best quarterback option out there for him, because not only did Geno Smith throw for 4,200 yards, he did throw, you know, 25 touchdown pass. He was a Pro Bowl quarterback. I know Pro Bowl is a little, you know, a little giving nowadays, or is taken or carry a little different weight than it did back in the day. But he was the best quarterback out there for him just because of, you know, the relationship that they had when he had him in Seattle, you know. So Pete did the best that he could with what he was given. And I feel like coming into this offseason, having the number one pick, he would have been able to find his quarterback. He had $100 million to play with. He would have been able to go out and get guys who he felt that fit his makeup, that how he wanted his team to look. And I thought the Raiders would have been like Denver Broncos with the turnaround, with, you know, having the proper talent and the proper pieces in place in order to help you do that. So I was very, very shocked and surprised by this firing just because of, we heard outside rumblings that Tom Brady, this was, Pete Carroll was his guy. But apparently 6 months is all he needed.
I think when you're a coach, it's all about the expectations you set. And I think as long as everybody is on the same page and honest about what the goal is of the season, then things like this, where a coach is fired with a pretty good resume, a possible Hall of Fame resume after 1 year, you know, things like this wouldn't happen if everybody agreed upon what the expectation was this year. And I think Pete's problem was they tried to win. You know, Pete, I think, tried to build the team there and sold them on the idea that he could take Antonio Pierce's team, and if given a quarterback who he had won with in Seattle, give me a running back in the first round who I'm going to win with now. Let's make a move to try to make this team better right this second, try to accelerate this rebuild. I think he made promises that he couldn't deliver on. And Geno was awful. I was shocked by how bad he was. I mean, I can't get over how bad he was there.
Hey, also real quick, you know what's crazy? He was bad this year, but he still threw 15 interceptions last year as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, that you knew was that could potentially happen. I mean, that was on the table. But I think he thought, I'm a defensive coach, but if I have Bowers, Genty, and Geno Smith, plus we're going to bring Chip Kelly in from Ohio State to run the offense, we're going to be a formidable team this year. We're going to be a very competitive team. We're going to compete for a playoff spot. And they ended up being the worst team in the NFL. And I think that's just a hard pill to swallow. If they were a young team that just had a bad year and was building towards something, I think he would have kept his job. But the rally cry from the Raiders was that they were going to instantly overnight turn into a team that maybe didn't make the playoff, but were irrelevant the entire year. And they just were the furthest thing from that.
Yeah, they're going to be bad for a while, as they have been for a while.
Well, not if Tom Brady has it his way.
They're going to be bad for a while.
Title of the pod.
He ain't out there playing. Michael Jordan thought the same thing when he was, you know, an owner. Right?
Yeah, that's right. John Elway got fired by the Broncos running the organization. Think about that.
It's different.
They're going to be bad for a while.
Because everybody don't have your mentality. Everybody don't have your mindset. So you can't jump into no one's body and be like, hey, I want you to do this, that, that, and the other.
But also pick what you want to do. Okay. Matt Ryan, don't say you're going to go do TV while running the Falcons. Tom Brady, don't run the Raiders while calling games on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. Taking jobs away from me.
No, but seriously though.
No. But seriously, Pat. That's right. They took a roster spot.
Yeah, no, but I mean it. Like, you can't do both great. So right. What's a higher priority for you? Is it to make a lot of money talking on TV, or is it to try to make a football team better? If I was Mark Davis, I wouldn't let Brady call games. If I were Arthur Blank, I wouldn't hire Matt Ryan to oversee my football operations.
I agree.
And go talk about games on Sunday.
Because I need you all in.
Right.